so it's inescapable for me to appear forgetful. I thought I was giving a paper, and I was supposed to have given a poster, so I appreciate Don Turley not being here, and I co-opt his slot here to talk about something which is really a lot less complicated than that title. Basically, I'm going to talk about extension teaching methodology and what we normally do, what I normally do when I go out and talk about the price outlook for cotton, what OA essentially did yesterday, and trying to bring more to bear on that, compare and contrasting on a regular basis, using simple econometric price forecasting models. So that's where I'm headed. What I normally do for a living, what I'm going to do next week and for the next 6 weeks, is go out and use a model to my audiences, my farmer audiences. If I was in Rio Hondo, I'd be throwing this up here, and my model is that graph. It's the normal thing implied by theory, and we think prices move in the opposite direction of projected ending stocks, or stocks to use ratio is what those green bars are. So that's my model, and if I was given a talk, I would spend a lot of time using the standard description of USDA variables that determine ending stocks, and the advantages of this approach is that it's pretty easy. You don't have to talk about statistics, or your audience doesn't have to have an understanding of that. They understand a lot of the elements that go into consumption and production and acreage, and especially acreage and production and weather. But this approach obviously has the advantage of simplicity. It also has the advantage of kind of subjectivity. I can use, when I'm talking about the balance sheet, I'll put that up there, and this is reflecting 2014, really. It's old crop. Those are old crop, the old crop balance sheet. But if I was given an outlook for where I thought that the March 15 or the May 15, July 15 contracts were going, I'd put those numbers up there, and I'd say, well, the production picture is pretty much over. That whatever it is, 16, almost 16 million bales is not going to change very much, in my opinion. And I would highlight the risk around mill use and around exports particularly. So, using this approach lets me zero in subjectively on the variables that I think are most variable. And so I identify that to my audience and give them kind of some perception of risk that way. And then I'll take that ending stocks number and say, all right, so we're increasing year over year. And you look back in history and can see what happens to prices when we tend to increase either by monthly estimates or increase year over year. It has the predictable effect on prices. So that's what we typically do. And I'd have some kind of a slide just like this saying, because of what I was just showing you, my subjective opinion, I think futures will be here, and I think, therefore, farm price will be 5 or 6 or 7 cents lower than that. And then there are published things out there that I always draw a comparison to. So if I'm talking about where the farm price is, I can point to where WASDE says their farm price is, and I can so I'm in the ballpark for that. I tend not to try to stray too far from where WASD says their price range is, but if there was a huge discrepancy, or if I thought there was a difference, I'd point out the discrepancy. All right, well, that's my bread and butter. Any economist ever getting a marketing talk has done this, and it's easy to do, it's easy to prepare, it's easy for audiences to digest, and there's nothing wrong with it, but I think there's more that we can do, and so this kind of started, frankly, with a student came in my office last April, and he was taking a simulation class. He needed some data to estimate some price models. So, I gave him some data, and we talked, real quickly over coffee about some suggested specifications for cotton prices. And he went away, and he came back, and he said, well, I estimated a farm price, and I estimated an A index. And I said, He said the R-squares were pretty good. I said, really? How good? He said, well, 80%. I said, really? Well, what were your point estimates? And we got them, and they were pretty close to where USDA was suggesting farm price should be and where A-Index was actually trading. So I took his estimates, and I slipped them into I do a weekly newsletter, and I slipped those estimates in there and said, well, here's my subjective opinion, which I publish every week in my newsletter. And then I said, and we've got some in-house estimates that are here. Well, that kind of led me, well, I probably ought to explain how I got those estimates. So I developed a little kind of subpage in my somewhat encyclopedic online newsletter talking about and describing regression forecasts and comparing and contrasting them to my own outlook and to other people's outlooks. That's where it started, and I've kept doing it because, first of all, the student would, every time the WASI numbers came out, he would re-estimate these things, and so it became a regular pattern that has fit into my newsletter very well. And that's different from my past efforts, other research efforts that I've seen with, price forecasting. Either you estimate a price model and it's embedded in a huge black box like Darren's model or something, price forecast models live there, and then they live in when a student does a thesis or a dissertation and does a scholarly publication. They exist for a short while, and then they live on a shelf out of date forevermore, but they don't usually regularly get pulled into extension programming because they're usually not updated constantly as often as we need something to be updated, which is weekly or every time we give a talk. So my goal was to do that, kind of take what this student had done and just sort of keep it up and have a easily implementable, and that means when the student is gone, which he is gone now, implementable by me, a system to where I can get current estimates and compare and contrast them and explain them and point out the advantages and disadvantages and basically kind of raise the bar of teaching about price forecasting to my audience, which is mostly a grower audience. So this is kind of where we are, and this is ripped right out of my newsletter. I have a subpage that, forecasting cotton prices using blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I go through that. That doesn't really change from month to month. I don't have equations. I also don't have a... Yeah, I do. Is that a pointer? No.
Anyway, my model is here. I didn't present it as equations because my audience wouldn't particularly appreciate that. So I'm forecasting price as a function of ending stocks and a control variable for the price cycle and a trend variable. So that's essentially it. Very simple. Very easy to update. I just take new WASDE numbers. It's an annual model. And so my estimate for the current year is the most current WASDE estimate. Otherwise, I'm using annual data on stocks to use and the annual average farm price or the yearly average A index, if I'm doing the A index model. But it's a simple approach. It's very easy to update. And a trend variable in there and trying to control for some of the humongous variability we've seen in recent years. All right, so here's most recent output. That's in the subpage too. I don't really expect my grower audience to give a hoot about this, but it's there. R-square is fairly decent. The variables are the right sign and significant. And, another advantage of doing this is that whereas when I'm waving my hands talking about the relationship of ending stocks to price, I can't put any quantitative, I could point to that graph and say, if ending stocks went up that much, maybe price ought to drop that much. But that's, I can't really talk quantitatively about where I think prices should go. But now I can. Now I've got coefficients. So I can actually make predictions about given certain movements in stocks to use where prices might go. So it allows me to do that. And I point out a few examples in my website discussion about that. I do that here. I've got a page of interpretation. So, I just kind of point out, how to interpret regression coefficients to the reader in terms of quantitatively. And then I talk about some advantages and disadvantages of doing this versus doing hand-waving ad hoc kind of approaches. And it actually kind of highlights, first of all, this is not predicting very well at all. It's overshooting because presumably I'm still not incorporating, even though I've got a dummy variable in there for the price spike, I'm still overshooting with my point estimate. I'm assuming that's because the trend variable's in there and it's some of the trends that it's capturing are the price movements of recent years, and things are settling down, and I'm still getting a point estimate that's too high relative to where the farm price is or where the farm price is likely to be, assuming the WASDE's right about the range of farm prices. So I kind of point that out and say, hey, I'm overshooting, and that's sort of the disadvantage of using models that use recent history. They're built on recent history, and recent history has kind of been kind of wild lately. And so that highlights the advantage of doing the subjective approach, lets me subjectively incorporate other things that are hard to incorporate into an econometric model, but
lets my subjective forecast maybe be a little more, incorporate more information and be a little more accurate. And this is the other reason, you know, who cares what the point estimate is, and this was pointed out in a previous thing too. The prediction interval around that point estimate is 50 cents wide. And I like to put this chart in my newsletter too. I pointed out to the growers, whether it's me or they're reading some Doan's newsletter or they're reading USDA or they're reading whatever and people throw out price forecasts, just know that because of recent history, the risk around those price forecasts is pretty dang wide. So I like, this is very useful because it lets me demonstrate, picture, graph what that risk is, just as a buyer beware to the listening audience. And it's the same thing for the A index. I'm overshooting again my, not as bad, but I'm overshooting my A index forecast and the risk around it is huge. Okay, so just to have something so I can stand up here with a straight face, we do have a futures price model, which is a monthly model, and it actually predicts a little bit better. So the way I describe that again in my newsletter is the same way. I talk about, you know, the rationale for doing this sort of thing, and then my model is here, and it's a monthly model of the most active contractors. Basically, it's the nearby contractor except for October. I'm going to skip October and go right to December. So I'm calling it the model of the most active New York futures contract, and the price is a function of a couple of things. Firstly, because it's monthly, we take the net position of the hedge funds right out of the commitment of traders data, and so we include that. The influence, the speculative influence on prices is incorporated. We get the monthly estimate of ending stocks, U.S. ending stocks. We include that under your another accounting variable. 2010 and 2011. You don't have a trend variable in there. So it's, again, it's just three variables, real simple. It doesn't do that bad of a job. It fits pretty well.
I put all this in here again for the sake of anybody who wants to read it, but where particularly the influence on futures price on the hedge fund position has allowed me to go in and say a few things that, I've gone in and said, well, early in the year, there was a, I forget, 18-cent price move up, and these guys, without implying causation, these guys were associated with about 3/4 of that price move. Based on coefficient right there, I could
make statements like that I couldn't make before. Got that written right in there. So the interpretation is kind of the same. Interpret coefficients, be able to make more quantitative statements than I've been able to make in the past. And actually, we're predicting not too badly from where futures are trading right now. So again, this is just something that's letting us draw comparisons and contrasts with ad hoc forecasts. It allows us to compare with other people's futures forecasts that are out there. It allows us to make quantitative statements. It allows us to highlight the advantages and disadvantages of both types of approaches, ad hoc and econometric. And it also, again, lets us put risk around it, which sort of gives pause to anybody's forecast, given what we've had. A lot could happen. So I think there's some uses to it. I'm planning on continuing it. If any of you have ideas, this is really what I wanted to get the most out of this, was to get any feedback now or later about ideas for modeling or new specifications or whatnot. It's something that we're going to try to continue and just kind of keep incorporating on a regular basis. And that's all I have.
Questions?
All right. Thanks a lot.